You're listening to a People of Note podcast, as heard on Classic 1027.
Good evening and welcome to People of Note on Classic 1027. I'm Richard Koch and this program is broadcast every Sunday from 6 to 8. In it, I talk to someone who is a person of note and we listen to music of their choice. And I'm very happy to tell you that we have a photographer in our program tonight. His name is Roger Ballen, but I think photographer is probably not what describes you best. Roger, first of all, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening. It's a great pleasure to be here this evening.
And how do you describe yourself?
Well, I guess, you're limited the words, so I would call myself photographer artist, although some of my work lately has not been in the photographic area. It's been in drawing and painting installations. But so I guess the only words I could use is photographer artist.
But one of the reasons you're on the program this Sunday is that you're doing something with Artscape and with ballet and opera. Just tell us what it is that you're doing down there, which is why you're on the program initially.
I'm doing this set and the costumes with my artistic director, Margaret Rousseau, for the opera Hansel and Gretel. So we're making all the sets, designing the sets, doing the planning for the sets, making the interiors, doing the costumes. And so we're involved in all those aspects, except physically building the sets. They have another team doing this, but it's all about aesthetics of design.
And that's a production which is coming up starting on the 3rd of April.
Yeah, it's the 3rd, the 6th, the 8th, and the 10th at Artscape in Cape Town, the Hansel and Gretel opera in the main Artscape building.
Actually, I have to say, it does seem quite odd to be doing live opera now, because that's a big theater, isn't it?
It's huge, actually. It's perhaps the biggest theater in South Africa. I think there's 2,000, something like that, seats. So it's a mammoth opera, a beautiful opera setting. Unfortunately, at least they're allowing it to happen, but the maximum amount of people that can view the opera at any given time is 100.
And there must be, is it with orchestra as well, or is it pared down orchestra? Because there must be 40 or 50 people involved in the production.
Yeah, the orchestra is operating in under certain conditions, but they are fully operational, as well as the actors, again under certain conditions. But these conditions shouldn't necessarily be noticed by the audience.
Yeah. But it is, actually, we do certainly live in extraordinary times. And I think one of the features of your artistry is that it does discover the extraordinary, I think. I've watched a few of your videos and some of your artwork, and it certainly does discover extraordinary things.
Yeah, well, the goal of my work is to take people, including myself, to a new zone in the mind, to expand the mind, expand consciousness. And to link, I guess, one part of the mind, which might be referred to as the subconscious buried mind, with the conscious mind. So, my images have a psychological impact.
And this, obviously, Hansel and Gretel has a lot of psychology in it as well. And there's sort of deeper levels in Hansel and Gretel. And are you uncovering that as well in this production?
Yeah, I think so. The set obviously brings out certain aesthetics of mine, and my aesthetic is harmonious in some ways with the narrative of Hansel and Gretel. So I think they add another, between the original narrative and my narrative and my set, I think we extend the zone of this opera. I mean, if you look at the traditional opera that I've seen on the internet a few times, it's in German, and it's almost like a fairy tale in some ways. It's not as I think psychological is what I've tried to do here. And so I think, we've extended the boundaries of this particular opera in all sorts of ways, which I'm pleased to be able to have done. I'm confident that it'll happen that way and people will see it that way.
Well, we're going to talk about that again later. But we're going to listen to your first piece of music now, which is called Chain Gang. And I think this is quite appropriate because after that, I want you to tell us how you came into this world of photography, because you started your life as something else. So let's listen to Chain Gang. That's your first choice. And then we'll come back to the story after that. Here it comes. That was Chain Gang, the choice of Roger Ballen, who's my guest in People of Note tonight. Roger, some of these pieces of music you might like to talk us through also as to why you chose them.
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm a product of the 60s. I grew up in New York City, went to high school there, went to University of California, Berkeley, the late 60s, early 70s. This was the height of the counterculture, the hippie period. And this period, I feel, was the most revolutionary period in many ways of the 20th century. And so many of the movements that we experience today came from the 60s. And it was a very spontaneous event that occurred in the Western world. And the centers of this event were places like Berkeley, California. So it really had a transformative effect on me. And so I was really into the music of the 60s, into the ideology of the 60s, and experienced the 60s and the early 70s, I think, to its fullest in many ways. So, you know, a lot of the songs that you'll hear tonight come from my youth, and they've stayed with me. And I can't say that I'm the world's classical musical expert, but, you know, I have some knowledge of it. But the 60s and 70s songs, which I think a lot of these songs have a, you know, an ongoing presence, even though they're sung 40 or 50 years later. So I think, you know, they're relevant now in some ways because they stick with people like the Chain Gang.
Yeah. And you actually didn't start as a photographer artist, or have you always been interested in that? Because your other life was as a geologist, I think.
Yeah, look, my mother started one of the first photo galleries in America in the 60s with some of the most famous photographers, and worked in Magnum, which was the center of creative photography in the 60s in New York City. So when I was in my teens, I met the most famous photographers of the world. They were very friendly with my mother. They gave her books and photos, and she was passionately involved in this field. So by the time I was 18, when I got my first camera for graduation, I went out there like a bullet. And by the time I was 18, I could take really excellent pictures. I mean, in the latest book I did, or book a couple of years ago called Ballen-esque, Roger Ballen, a retrospective, published by Thames and Hudson, you can see photos I took at age 18, and I'm proud of those pictures. They're powerful photographs. So I was ready to go at age 18 because I had like years and years of watching and listening and building up this need to do photographs. And I was just hooked the minute I got that camera. But I didn't do this as a profession. I decided, and my mother thought it was a bad idea, and I wasn't into commercial photography. You got to understand, I was part of the counterculture. So advertising, corporate, doing things for corporations, doing things for consumable goods wasn't in my headscape at all. So, you know, I was just doing it as a expression of Roger Ballen. And that's the way it's always been, you know, for 54 years now of doing pictures. It's always been an expression of passion. And I decided to do another career, which was geological. And I did that for about 25 years. But I always have done photography since 1968 to 2021. I've been doing that every year.
Yeah. But in fact, that's what brought you to South Africa. It was the geology.
Well, the first thing that brought me to South Africa in 1973-74, I hitchhiked from Cairo to Cape Town. It was a 9-month trip, a backpack trip from Cairo to Cape Town, and that's how I got here initially. So, and then I went and did an overland trip from Istanbul to New Guinea, and eventually went back to America, did my first photo book called Boyhood, and then did a PhD in the geological area. And then married my current wife, Linda Maross Ballen, who's an artist, a teacher, who's a very excellent teacher. I always say she's the best art teacher in South Africa. And I married her in 1981 and have lived in Johannesburg actually permanently since 1982.
Well, it's an amazing story. And obviously, all the way along, you've been taking photographs.
Yeah, 54 years of taking pictures. You know, 54
and,
years.
And that must pictures. Be, yeah, I was going to say, it must be quite a collection of pictures, one way and another. And you must tell us also where people can see these images. So give us an idea for our listeners where they should go to see some of these images.
Well, look, I think I've done like 27 books already. So, but a lot of these books aren't available in the bookstores. And so I think there's two places to start if you want to see my work. One is you can see my website. You can look under rogerballen.com, and that has a lot of interesting aspects of my careers, from the collections to the photos to the films, all these things. So the website has the most concise information. And then if you're interested in the books, you know, you can – I think Ballenesque is available. The World According to Roger Ballen is available, and Roger the Rat is available in South Africa. Those are the latest books. I would think that they're still in stock in South Africa, and you know, you can ask the bookstore owner whether what is available and what they can get a hold of.
Okay, now I just want to spell your name for our listeners. It's Roger, and the surname is Ballen, B-A-L-L-E-N. So just so that you find the right place or find the right book. But we're going to hear your next choice of music now, which is some klezmer music. It's called the best of, from an album called The Best of Yiddish Songs and Klezmer Music, and it's called Freilach. That was some klezmer music chosen by my guest in People of Note, Roger Ballen. Roger, does that have some resonance with your past as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, America basically is made up of immigrants, and my mother and father's family came from Russia as Jewish immigrants, and they were very Jewish in so many ways. They could speak Yiddish, and they basically came to the United States towards the end of the 19th century and located themselves in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So, you know, they were part of Yiddish culture, old Jewish culture, pre-war, World War II, World War I culture. And so, you know, their mentality was very, very old Jewish, Yiddish, and Yiddish they could speak it. And sometimes they tease me with Yiddish words. So, you know, it's the roots of my family life, the roots of my heritage in many ways go back to old Jewish culture. And New York, you know, it's the most Jewish city in the world outside of cities in Israel. So, you know, I grew up in New York, so the whole Jewish culture was predominant there.
Now, and I noticed that, in fact, a lot of your photographic work, your artistic work, is done in black and white rather than in color, which gives it a sort of slightly documentary historic feel as well.
Yeah, well, look, black and white is a minimalistic abstract art form, and it's much more difficult than color in a way, because the colors somehow or another give people a semblance of reality. But black and white is reduced and it's purified and it's and abstract, as I said, and it's more difficult to work in black and white, and you have to understand how you can put abstract forms together, create substantive meaning. So yeah, I was hooked on black and white for 50 years, and just by chance, Leica Camera gave me a camera to do the video for the book Ballenesque, Roger Ballen, a retrospective. And during that time, because I didn't own a digital camera, I started taking some of the pictures in color, and I couldn't believe it that the color ones, because you can take a color picture and make it into black and white with a digital camera, that the color ones were better than the black and white at that time. So beginning about 3-4 years ago, nearly all my photographs have been in color, but 50 years of black and white and 3 or 4 in color.
And of course, there's some great black and white photographers. I mean, that in terms of the photography, from your own tradition in America, I think of Ansel Adams, and here in South Africa, David Goldblatt. And in fact, there are some parallels in a way between you and David Goldblatt, because he photographed people sort of on the fringes of society in many ways too, which is what you do, I think.
Yeah, but I think mine are different than David Goldblatt. David Goldblatt, I don't want to speak for David Goldblatt, but I'll just speak for myself. You know, mine are more of a psychodrama, a theater of the absurd, I mean, if you talk about the last, since, say, 95, they're about creating an artistic complex aesthetic, and I don't really necessarily see my pictures as having any real documentary value to them. They're yeah. more about the documenting of the
mind,
the human condition, of the mental state of the human condition. So, you know, I think I really, maybe the early work of mine in the Dorps and the Platteland overlap with David Goldblatt, but certainly since 95, I don't really see any link.
And the fact that you were involved in geology took you to some out-of-the-way places.
Yeah, I mean, when I did the two projects, Dorps and Platteland, I traveled nearly 700,000 kilometers by road in South Africa. And I always said to people, if I decided to give up geology and photography, somebody should hire me as a travel agent, because I knew the country better than anybody else. I'm sure about this. I knew every little dorp, every little road, all over the country, backwards and forwards and backwards. So I really traveled the country. And a lot of the work at the time was for geology. And when I had free time, I traveled all over the place to do the photos. So, yeah, so there was a good link between my career in geology and my artistic endeavor in photography. And I was lucky I had the geology because, you know, I wasn't a commercial photographer, so it was important to have a source of income, and the geology supported the habit of photography. And without that habit, like most other artists, you know, you'd really struggle. There was no market for selling photographs in South Africa at that time. So I was lucky I had these dual careers.
And you've been in and out of a lot of doors in that time, and your next choice is The End, The Doors. That was a longer piece of music chosen by Roger Ballen called The Doors, and that's a very interesting choice too. Just tell us about that.
Yeah, The Doors were really popular in 68, 69, you know, when I first entered university. They were one of the groups, you know, and not Jim Morrison and The Doors. So, you know, it was really popular, and I was really struck by his lyrics, you know. Most of the lyrics you hear in music for young people are quite trite. You know, it's the same stuff over and over again. Lovey, kissy, crybaby, this sort of stuff. And Jim Morrison said some profound things in his lyrics, and it really struck me because, you know, that's what I've always been trying to uncover through my artwork and through everything I've read, something more substantive, more poetic, more philosophical. And you know, I found that in The Doors. There was some of those songs had that element in it, and that's why I decided to include it, because it was part of my counterculture background. I became a hit that lasted through time and also has some meaning to it.
Yeah, and obviously via your photography, you've been looking for deeper meanings in life and the lives of people. And perhaps you could recommend one of your videos to go to for people to see. I mean, the one I watched, one about birds, and I watched the one which has had 164 million views now on YouTube, which is I Think You Freaky. And they're quite disturbing in a way when you watch them. Just talk to us about that.
A lot of people think my work is disturbing, but it's not intrinsically disturbing. It's just that the people who watch the work, and I'm not being critical in any way,
having found
something in the back of their mind, as Jung said, the shadow side. They haven't been able to find that thing in the back of their mind, and they've pushed it down, repressed it. And my work, for some reason or another, I can't say why. I don't necessarily try to do anything. I just try to produce strong work. Brings out things in the back of the mind that people get nervous about because they spend most of their time trying to avoid the fundamental conditions of their own minds and of the human condition on the planet. So they try to avoid this at all costs, whether it's buying cars, you know, watching videos, or eating too much. And so it's a life of evasion, and the pictures of mine somehow or another pierce that and bring up certain things that people then refer to as dark. but they're not intrinsically dark. In fact, I find my pictures quite absurd and humorous, and a lot of people also find them absurd and humorous. It just has something to do with the state of the mind of the person viewing the pictures.
Well, I guess that's always the case, that people are interpreting what they see for their own purposes. And how have you brought some of that into Hansel and Gretel also, which is the opera for which you've designed costumes and sets?
Yeah, I mean, the so-called Balinese aesthetic, it pervades the set in Hansel and Gretel. That's why they chose me to do this. So the sets that you see in Hansel and Gretel in some ways feel like sets from my photographs. You know, there's a link between the sets I make and come up with when I make my photos and the type of sets you see on the stage. So there is that inherent link between the Roger Bellin aesthetic and the narrative of Hansel and Gretel. So I've integrated the two. And I think, as I said earlier, that's why I think the opera will be different, take people to another zone and challenge the nature and meaning of the opera in particular.
And that's the opera which is coming to Artscape on the 3rd of April and then running for several performances. Are they going to film it as well so that it can go online?
Yes, they are filming it, which is a huge relief to me. They are filming it, and I don't know what the plans are. I hope it will go online, but they have plans to make a film of it, and they've done some documentation of the development of the sets, and they hope to put together, you know, a full video of the opera and the development of the set. So this is a big relief, because it's like having a show somewhere in the world, and you know, maybe you go up there and you see it, and then at the end of the day, all you get is like a few newspaper clippings. Half the time you can't read them, and that's why I've always liked books and videos. You know, there's something more timeless about it. And so it's important to video it, and it at least has some, you know, can extend itself beyond the few performances here.
So your next choice is Ravi Shankar and Irumudium. That was Ravi Shankar with Irumudium, the choice of Roger Bellin, who's my guest on People of Note tonight. He's a photographer artist. He has been also a geologist in his life, but what he really loves in life is doing photographs, but also you add to those by doing drawings and paintings and collage. Do you manipulate the photography in any way, or do you just add to it with collage and drawings and so on?
No, I don't manipulate the photography. There's not one of my pictures that's been manipulated. I always say nothing beats reality. So sitting next to a computer screen trying to create an extended reality is not the same as creating the reality in real life. So I don't have the capability of manipulating the photographs.
Yeah.
You know.
But do you call yourself an artist as well, apart from being a photographer?
Yeah, I mean, the problem these days is, what is an artist? You know, for me, it just comes down to one thing, because it's become such a multidimensional, overused word. And, you know, all it really means is that you use a media to express yourself. And so, you know, photographers can become artists. People who make drawings can be artists. Anybody, you know, what do we actually mean? So it's ultimately in the time zone of decades or hundreds of years, it's people who say something in it that has some substantive value over time. And that's sometimes what we like to refer to as artists, as saying something of inherent value. But in today's contemporary word, an artist is just somebody who expresses themselves through media. And so doesn't mean you're saying anything of any value. You're just doing art. That's all. So it's a bad word. There's no more words. Unfortunately, we're not like Eskimos who have like 9 or 10 words for snow. We, you know, unfortunately, in Western culture, we're stuck with the word artist.
Yeah. Your next choice is Paul Simon, and this has some resonance with South Africa. Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. That was the great Paul Simon with Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. And that brings us to a strong South African connection also with Ladysmith Black Mambazo. What was it about South Africa, or what is it about South Africa that keeps you here and attracts you?
You know, there's so many things about South Africa that keep me here. You know, it's, you know, whether it's the weather, whether it's the diversity of the people, whether it's the warmth and friendliness of the culture, whether it's the differences between one culture and the next, whether it's the wildlife. You know, there's so many things that have kept me here over the years, and I really am so thankful to the country for giving me the opportunity to do the things I've done here over the years. So, you know, I am a South African citizen, so, you know, I'm not just an outsider here. So,
and, you know, it's and been you, a, yeah, you obviously
great still. Wealth. It's provided me with a great wealth of life and process here.
And, but you still travel a lot? Well, before COVID.
Yeah. I mean, I was a lifetime platinum member of South African Airways.
Yeah.
So I usually travel maybe 10 times a year overseas. I traveled so much. And so the last 18 months, it's been the least I've traveled since 1968.
Wow. So So lockdown, but that in itself creates opportunities, I think, or has it not for you?
Oh yeah, because I built the a center, the Roger Ballen Center for the Arts. It's called the Inside Out Center. It's 48 Jan Smuts Avenue, across from the Westcliff Hotel, up from the Holocaust Museum. So I built a whole new building, a museum that I moved into in August. And we'll be showing different forms of group shows that have something to do with Africa, with the Roger Ballen aesthetic, which are important to the South African public and a range of artists and public here. So it's been there couldn't have been a better time to have this lockdown, because I've got this whole building and the center moving forward, and I'm really, really excited about our program in the future.
And again, where do people find information about that?
Well, the center hasn't had its first exhibition, but you can go to my website and there'll be information regarding the opening of the center and events in the center. This will probably take place towards the end of the year. You know, it's no point trying to do these things with this COVID problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully by the end of the year, the veil of COVID will have been lifted, and we can start the first exhibitions at the center on 48 Jan Smuts Avenue, which is in Forest Town, Johannesburg.
Well, you must please let us know when that happens, and then we can advertise it here on Classic 102.7. Your next choice is Leonard Cohen. Sadly, he died last year. A very interesting, I mean, earlier on you said you were interested in the lyrics of songs, and his lyrics are really extremely interesting. This one is called You Want It Darker, and it features Canton Gideon Zellermeyer. It's Leonard Cohen. That was Leonard Cohen with You Want It Darker. Now, if you like, there are many layers in Leonard Cohen, just as I'm sure there are many layers in your artworks too. He's a really interesting guy.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, he's really one of the few poets in contemporary music. I mean, he's, as you say, his lyrics are meaningful. And a lot of people, I'm not trying to beat my own chest, but a lot of people think that my voice sounds like his, especially as years go by. And, you know, he comes from a Jewish background. He's, as I said, I've always been attracted to his work for decades and decades and decades, because there was something substantive in what he was singing, what he was saying. And, you know, immediately was attracted to him. He's really a unique person in this business.
Yeah. Just a matter of interest, do you have any music in your own background?
No. Well, you know, when I was younger, I played the trumpet, but I can't say that I was extremely musical. And to be perfectly honest with you, one of the reasons I think I have an expanded visual mind is that my ear is not exactly fabulous in terms of hearing and understanding music in so many ways. So it's like a blind person's sense of touch is expanded. And for me, I like music, but I don't have the same capabilities I do as through the visual sensation.
And yet the music chosen, or the soundtracks chosen for your videos, are also very interesting. I find them rather fascinating. And now you're working in opera, which is a sort of multi-sensory art form. So music is at least playing some part, in an important part in your life, I think.
Yeah, it has, because, the music, when I was younger, the music was part of the so-called counterculture. So I was at Woodstock, for example, and went to Dylan and Joan Baez and this one and that one concert. So it played a huge role in my development as a young man. It was a form of finding oneself, a form of rebellion, a form of speaking out against culture and coming to terms with maybe more important things in life. So music was almost a form of philosophy in the late 60s and early 70s, and so it played a huge role in the development of my foundation or my career as an artist, I think. I think it was integral to many of the things, many of the places that I'm at right now.
Yeah. And your next choice, Pink Floyd, from the album The Dark Side of the Moon, is Brain Damage. Let's listen to it, and then we can come back and talk about that. That was Pink Floyd from the album The Dark Side of the Moon, and that was a piece called Brain Damage, the choice of Roger Ballen, who's my guest in People of Note tonight. That's a program you're listening to on Classic 102.7. This program is broadcast every Sunday from 6 to 8, and as I'm doing tonight, and thanks to the wonders of modern science, I can do it remotely. I'm talking to Roger Ballen, who's in Cape Town, getting ready for the performances of Hansel and Gretel, and I'm talking to him in Joburg about, in this case, brain damage. Roger?
Yeah, thank you. So, look, the issue of Pink Floyd and this particular song goes back to the issue of normality. Again, this was an important concept that came out of the 60s and early 70s. What is normal? Why do you call yourself normal? Does society have any leaders that are actually normal but not insane? What do you mean by insanity? These are all important issues that were explored, and the issues of normality, insanity, what is madness, pervade a lot of my photographs. So when people look at my pictures, they think, is this real? Is this possible? Is this only Roger Ballen, or did this really happen in the world? Because can this happen? Because if something happened like this, it might be considered insanity. Do I want to deal with insanity? Am I scared of insanity? Am I insane? What do I mean by insanity? These are all important, profound issues, but people are a little bit reticent to deal with them.
Because that's what the world is today. I mean, we are living in a confused time, and I see your next choice is called Ball of Confusion. Let's listen to that one, and then we can discuss it afterwards. That was a piece called Ball of Confusion. That's what the world is today. Roger Ballen is my guest in People of Note. Roger, does your work in any way have political comment as well?
Well, I don't consider myself a political photographer, but, in an obvious, overt way, but they are political in lots of ways, because, for example, you see a lot of animals in the pictures, and the relationship between humanity and the pictures and the animals is not a very comfortable one. It's a very unhealthy one. It's a very divided one. It's a very separated one. So, that is a statement in its own way, but it's not only about that. You can't define my pictures in one way or the other. My pictures are multi-layers. Sometimes the meanings are opposite. So, there are political elements in them. And I would say that if one wants to go back to the fundamentals of what I'm trying to do and trying to say, they're about the politics of the mind, of getting one part of the mind to talk to the other part of the mind. That's, in my personal opinion, the problem on the planet. Until the people have a more holistic deeper understanding of themselves in some way or another, you know, progress is limited. It, you know, will be continually dominated by the, you know, the more deeper psychological instincts of the species. And, you know, this is what we find over and over again. And it doesn't disappear. You know, the older you get, you just see so much of what's going on is just one big circle, and you just hope that the stability, you know, stays that way. But, you know, there's always something coming around, whether it's COVID or whether it's some war somewhere that, you know, that can cause a conflagration on the planet in one way or another. So, yeah, you're right. The politics is the politics of the mind. That's what I've been focused on, not necessarily about one particular country's politics over another.
No, I understand that. But on your travels, which have been quite extensive, I mean, you've been down Africa and then you went also to New Guinea. Have you ever found yourself, and I mean this in a sort of physical sense, in a conflict zone other than a mental conflict? Have you found yourself in a physical conflict zone?
Plenty of times.
And has that produced material for you for your photographs also?
Yeah, I mean, it's war and aggression and dislike of human values. It's true. I mean, it's a state of mental chaos. That's what happens when war happens. It's a state of breakdown of the rational values of the species and taken over by the irrational values of, not values, irrational instincts of the species, which then pervade for certain periods of time. So, yeah, this is just a revelation of the deeper instincts of the species. So, yeah, which come up throughout, which reveal themselves in all sorts of subtle and non-subtle ways in my images. Yeah, it's clear.
Yeah, but you seem also to be able to make friends with people on the fringes. I mean, I see you in your videos chatting to people quite comfortably one-on-one when they're obviously, they're people, but they're not from your sort of circle of friends. They're just people who are living. And you obviously have a feeling to be able to talk to people.
No, you're 100% right. And this goes back to even teenage days, over 50 years ago. I always got along with all sorts of people, and I always got along with people living on the edge. You know, I have a way with them. They trust me. I like them. There's a genuine, I can create a genuine understanding with these people because I empathize with them, and they, I guess they feel that I'm not just a phony there that take pictures of them and run away. So, you know, there's a true interest in it and a true relationship I feel towards people living on the edge, whether it's people living in Africa or whether it's people living in Appalachian America or in Siberia. You know, I've always got along with people like that, and I really like being with them. And to be honest with you, again, some of my best friends here in South Africa, probably my best friends in South Africa, are people from living on the edge. And, you know, I get literally 10, 15 messages a day from people that I've known for 20, 30 years, and they trust me and like me. And I guess I've been a doctor, a lawyer, a
psychologist,
financier, a psychologist, a teacher, a chauffeur, a food provider, a clothes provider for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people here over the years. So, you know, I can really look in the mirror and say, you know, I've been done only good to the people I've worked with. And I don't think there's one enemy I've created among these in, you know, the 30-something years that I've photographed here.
Yeah. Well, your next choice, we were talking about places of conflict. This is The Warrior from the original cast of Ipin Tombi. That was The Warrior from, performed by the original cast of Ipin Tombi, the choice of Roger Ballen, my guest in People of Note. Roger, do you ever acknowledge in any way the people who have been part of your photographic world? And I'm thinking of these people that you've photographed over the years, the ones you've just been talking about, who are your friends. How because in a way, photography can be quite intrusive in people's lives. You say that you're very friendly with these people, and yet you're displaying sides of them which are quite revealing.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'm not the only one so-called doing that. If you read a newspaper, look on the TV, listen to the radio, look at magazines, you know, this is pervasive in everywhere in human society. And watch the BBC, watch CNN, turn on any TV channel. It's the same stuff over and over again. So, you know, not necessarily excusing myself, but I think that the real issue is my pictures have a piercing value. And they stay with people, and then people, as I said, don't necessarily like to be unsettled that way, because the crux of the picture goes straight into their state of being, and that upsets them, and then they try to blame that upset on me. While the real upset is the fact that they haven't created their own state of being that with any insight. And so that's my opinion, to tell you the truth, because when I show these pictures to the people that I work with, and I always give them the pictures, they love them. They love them. They're on their walls. They want more of them. They show their friends, their family. And to tell you the truth, which is the real truth, I think 9 out of 10 people I show these pictures to who have taken the pictures of find them funny. They don't find them disturbing. Yeah. They find them humorous. Yeah. So why is it that the people looking at the pictures find them humorous and other people say they're disturbing? So it tells you a lot about the people who look at the pictures.
Yeah. Your next choice, Janis Joplin, Me and Bobby McGee. Let's just listen to it, and then you can tell us about it. That was Me and Bobby McGee, Janis Joplin performing. Roger, why have you chosen that one?
Well, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, they're part of this counterculture period. So Doors, you know, a lot of these people died of drug overdose, suicide. They were part of this loud rebellion by the youth in the late 60s, early 70s. And it was a 3-4 year period that this occurred in. And as I said earlier, it had major, major ramifications for culture in the world following that. And, you know, so this was like a primal creative vision that pervaded Western culture during this time. And, you know, I was deeply affected by this music and what it said, like a lot of other people at the time. And then, you know, these people disappeared. Janis died, Jimmy died, and Doors died, Jim Morrison. And, you know, then it sort of disappeared, this whole movement. But, you know, it's always interesting to find, you know, I'm 70 years old, I'll be 71 next month. A lot of the people who came out of this period, this 3-4 year period, seem to have a different viewpoint of life. There's something more substantive about a lot of these people than the people who came a little later. This period, I can't tell you the type of impact it had on many of the participants at a certain age during this time. It really was pervasive. It's like somebody who's experienced the Holocaust, or somebody who experienced, you know, being in a city that got bombed out in some way. It just never left them. It created a view of the oneself and the world around them that, you know, just had an extra layer of insight.
And earlier on, you talked about Woodstock, and you were there, I take it.
Yeah, I was there, and it was sort of an interesting story, because the New York Times called me up right before the 50th anniversary of Woodstock a couple of years ago and said, did I have any more Woodstock pictures? Because I had put one in one of my books, and I said, I don't really think so. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at my contact sheets. So I actually found my contact sheets, and there were 3 contact sheets I had, and I couldn't believe it. I found like 8 really great pictures from Woodstock. And that really told me something about Roger Ballen at the time, about my capability. And when I saw those pictures at early age 19, I was able to take really great pictures, as I told you. So by age 19, I was ready to go as a photographer. I had the vision, and I had the capability of transforming the world through a camera. And that was really what was interesting about my experience at Woodstock, besides all the other stories. I could spend the next hour talking about my stories about Woodstock here with you. And I don't know where to begin, but, you know, again, it was one of those experiences that, you know, left you with something.
Well, let's begin with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. This is called Woodstock. That was Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young from Deja Vu. That was called Woodstock, the choice of Roger Ballen, who's my guest in People of Note, and who was at Woodstock in the days of Woodstock and has the photographs to prove it. And I see that your final two choices are rather more conventional in terms of classic 1027 listeners. That's The Trout, Die Forelle, and the theme from Schindler's List. I'm just interested to know, when you're working, and presumably, do you produce a lot of the work yourself, or do you, is that done by other people now? You direct it?
No, I have one assistant artistic director called Marguerite Rousseau. She's worked for me for 14 years. So basically, she's the only one that, at least on the photographic side, that comes with me and actually assists me in the creation. So there's just one other person. There are other assistants who come. Some of the people have, worked with me as young people for many years. They're from the other side of the city, who help, you know, with building things, moving things. You know, a number of these people, one of the persons I've known for 25 years now, and the family for over 25 years. So the people that are in these families from the other side that I work with, that help me with the more, laborious
side.
Jobs, but only one other person is involved with me in the creativity, and that's Marguerite. So.
Yeah, so it's an amazing legacy, and I assume that this place you've created on Jan Smuts Avenue in Forest Town is going to be your legacy.
Yeah, I really hope so. You know, one doesn't know what will happen after one passes to the next place, but I really hope it can make a long-term contribution to art and culture in South Africa, and I'm really confident, at least while I'm walking the planet, that we'll produce exhibitions in the venue that that people won't forget and have some lasting meaning and value for them and the culture in general.
Are you something of a teacher as well, or is that not of interest to you? A mentor?
No, I do. I do. Look, in the end of the day, the pictures have to teach something. You have to the pictures should teach something to people about themselves, but I give classes all over the world for many, many years, and I've always enjoyed it. And, you know, they're 3-4 day classes. I don't associate myself with the university teaching month after month, but, you know, I do classes, as I said, from Ivy League schools in America to classes in China or Siberia or to South Africa. So I do this. I've done this for many, many years.
Yeah. And just a matter of interest, do you listen to music while you're working, or is that just a distraction?
Sometimes we turn on the music. I don't know if it necessarily helps or doesn't help me create. You know, the creative process is so complex and so difficult to talk about and so difficult to predict that I'm not quite clear what state of mind leads to good pictures. I can tell you that some of my greatest pictures occurred when I didn't feel well, when my nose was clogged or I had a headache or something and I was tired, and I got some of my greatest pictures. And there have been many times where I have tremendous energy and nothing happens. It's like fishing, you know. It's just impossible to really judge what are the components of creativity. You just got to be there. You got to be disciplined. You got to be focused. You got to have passion. And you have to have a brain for what you're doing, and those are the things that make a difference. You can't just sit and think by dreaming all night or hoping you're going to take pictures that will happen. I'm an extremely disciplined person, and, you know, 4-5-6 days a week and afternoons a week I go out and take pictures. Whether I'm feeling great or not feeling great, I'm just there, and that's the only way to go ahead. You know, get out there, take the pictures, and be your most strongest critic. You know, you have to be a ruthless critic of your own work and not fall into mediocrity.
And I think that's probably true of any artistic venture, discipline, passion. Certainly in the music field, it's so. And we're going to listen to two people who have that, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and Gerald Moore. This is Die Forelle, the Trout. That was Die Forelle, or the Trout, sung by Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau with Gerald Moore accompanying. And we're getting towards the end of the program now, and I just want to say that Roger Ballen is doing the sets and the costume design, and I'm sure a lot more as well in terms of the overall feel of Hansel and Gretel, which is in Cape Town. It's happening at Artscape starting on the 3rd of April, and there are further few performances after that, and if you go to the Artscape website, you will find the details, or even Cape Town Opera, you'll find all those details there. And we really look forward to the time when your venue in Forest Town is up and running and that people can see more of your work. But Roger, just to remind them, they can find your work by looking you up on a website, Roger Ballen, Ballen, .com, and that's, you'll find the websites there, and I've found many videos and so on quite easily on various websites, so do go there and look them up. And let's listen to your final choice, Roger, which is the theme from Schindler's List. And I just want to know, have you ever made, or are you ever thinking of making, a longer film of any sort?
I recently made a longer film, a 25-minute film called Roger the Rat. It mirrors the publication called Roger the Rat that came out a few months ago. And I haven't released the film yet. I thought it might be better to release it in a few months after this COVID crisis has sort of toned itself down. So there will be a 25-minute film, and it stars Daniel Buckland. He did an absolutely fabulous job as Roger the Rat. And he's just a great mime artist, and the film, I'm sure, will have a profound effect on people who see this film. Hopefully it'll be released in the next few months.
Well, there we are. Things to look forward to. But here comes the theme from Schindler's List. That was the theme from Schindler's List, music by John Williams. And that's the final choice of Roger Ballen, who's been my guest in People of Note. Thank you, Roger, very much for being on the program.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really enjoyed every minute of it. And I wish you and your audience good health and take care, and looking forward to being in touch with your audience in the future. Thank you very much.
That's a great pleasure. Thank you. And to all of you,
take care.
And to all of you at home, thanks for listening, and until next time here on Classic 1027, we wish you all a very good night.